Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast titled PLC Made Easy, A Day in the Life of Developing Pre-Integrated EtherCAT Programmable Controller Logic. I'm Kurt Schwader, your moderator, with today's speakers, John Ralston from Freescale, Chris Alt from QNX Software Systems, and Stefan Mizera from Isograph. Today's schedule consists of a 50-minute presentation, leaving about 10 minutes at the end of the hour for audience Q&A. Before we begin, I'd like to run down some features of your audience console. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fill your entire screen. The Download Slides button allows you to download and print slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this eCast so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box enables you to participate in today's event. You simply type your question into the box and submit it using the Submit button. You can submit a question at any time during the presentation, and we encourage you to do so early and often while you're looking at the material and the question is fresh in your mind. We'll do our best to address these questions during the closing Q&A. And if you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, you could submit those too, and one of our technicians will be happy to respond to you during the eCast. Finally, this eCast will be posted online within 24 hours, and an audio-only podcast will also be made available. More details on this at the end of the Q&A. Our presenters today are John Ralston from Freescale, Chris Alt from QNX Software Systems, and Stefan Mizera from Isograph. John Ralston is a system architect at Freescale, where he's focused on delivering reference solutions based on Power Architecture processors and supporting customers in their latest design endeavors. Based out of East Kilbride, Scotland, he has been at Freescale since 1983, focusing on networking, telecom, and industrial solutions. His areas of expertise include industrial and communications protocols, multi-core, and functional safety. He has a Bachelor of Science in Physics from Harriet Watt University, as well as a teaching degree in physics and mathematics. Chris Alt is a product manager at QNX Software Systems, where he focuses on medical and general embedded markets. Prior to joining QNX, Chris worked in a various roles, including software engineering, engineering management, product management, and technical sales at AppZero, Ciena, Liquid Computing, Nortel, and Wind River Systems. Stefan Mizera is a global account manager for Isograph. Stefan has been with Isograph since 1998, previously in customer support management, as well as sales management roles. Stefan completed his Bachelor of Electrical Engineering from McGill University in Control Systems, Telecommunications, and Power Systems. John will be leading off the presentation today. John, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Kurt. And now you can see, to understand how PLC was implemented, the four companies, as you notice, I can't count. We've only got three up here, but Koenig's bio will appear in the downloaded version. Freescale, QNX, and Isograph and Koenig got together to generate a PLC to actually get it to work. Now, where did this come from? Back in the Industrial Revolution, we had mechanical things running around, and they were actually programmed by using punch cards. Well, they weren't cards in those days, they were punched bits of wood. Then eventually, when the electronic age came around, they started to hardwire things. They had in web devices, sensors, and so on, and a bit of computing power. Then eventually, standardization occurred, where the fact that high-level languages were developed that were specific to the old relay logic, and that was replaced by ladder logic and so on. And that led to the standardization of the PLC functional block that we were trying to implement just now. And this is done in IEC 61131. Now, where does the PLC sit? If I show you here, what we have is generic block diagram of a complete industrial system. The top portion of it shows you the back office portion. The center bit is where the PLC sits, and that usually controls logic, motion control, and safety in certain applications. And you can see the human interface, but the thing we want to concentrate on today is the PLC. What we need to do is be able to connect the PLC and the devices together. Now, this shows you a series of field buses that are used in the industrial environment. On the left-hand side here, we have the serial-orientated buses, and they're main people that actually implement them in case Profibus with Siemens, DeviceNet, Rockwell, CAN, many people. Over here on the packet-orientated, i.e. Ethernet, we got Ethernet IP and EtherCAT. And EtherCAT is the one we're looking at today to take us into building the PLC communication. So how do we go about building this PLC? Well, first of all, we need a piece of hardware, and that hardware has to be able to connect and run the particular protocols. So we're looking at here is something that can do Ethernet or RS-485. Because we're looking at EtherCAT, Ethernet is of interest. So part of the system from Freescale is the Core IQ family, and this particular processor was chosen. It's a dual-core SoC based on the PowerPC architecture. The main reason it was chosen is because it can handle a lot of protocols. It has Ethernet controllers on board. It has a very smart programmable serial engine that can do anything from Profibus all the way through to Ethernet bit banging. So this was the device of choice by Freescale to put into the system. Now, the device itself is all requires just some external DDR and a bit of flash and the correct PHYs to allow it to work. Now, luckily, we've been developing a relatively small board. It's 19 millimeters by 90 millimeters. And this shows you here the white bit at the top on the top left-hand corner is a little heat sink on top of the 1025 processor. And that provides the complete development kit. On there, there are all the interfaces pinned out at the bottom. You have the Ethernet, you have USB, you have SD card capability on the bottom side. We can take a mini PCI. It can be self-powered and so on off of a 5-volt rail. So that's now got the hardware. What do we need next? We need some sort of RTOS, and this is where I hand off to Chris, who's going to discuss about Neutrino from QNX.
Excellent. All right. Thanks very much, John. What I want to show you here today is that your choice of operating system can significantly impact the development and product efforts and timelines, and the amount of work and testing you need to do when building industrial applications. And not all operating systems are equal. Sure, they all provide you with the ability to create tasks and handle interrupts and access hardware. They have inter-process communication and synchronization primitives, but there's a lot more to building devices that need high availability and are running mission-critical processes. Without doing the proper OS architectural comparisons, you may be choosing an operating system that requires you to do much more work than needed. And QNX Neutrino offers some really cool internal components that can really reduce your development cycle. So I'm not just talking about kernel architecture. I'm also talking about the features and benefits that result from the kernel architecture. But first, it's important to understand that there are different types of kernel architectures and how these different types can impact overall system availability, reliability, but from a platform perspective. Original embedded designs were based on a real-time executive, which provides the basic services to host an application. It offers conveniences like a flat address space, so pointers can be shared among tasks for the sharing of objects and data. But the problem with real-time executive is that it has a flat address space and pointers can be shared among tasks. So all applications, all drivers, and the kernel itself in a real-time executive are all in a single address space. A single corruption in any one of these components will take down the entire system. So to solve this problem, RTOSes have advanced to take advantage of the MMU, the Memory Management Unit, which provides separation between all of the applications themselves and from the kernel itself. So a monolithic kernel is one that separates all user processes from one another and from the kernel, but the kernel itself is a single entity. So a corruption in a user process can be contained to just that user process, while the kernel and the rest of the system are protected from the corruption. But the problem still remains is that there's a single kernel entity, so buffer overflows, bad pointers, etc., can still affect the kernel. One thread could syscall into the kernel, providing bad data, and crash the kernel completely. And once this happens, well, the whole system needs to restart. Examples of monolithic kernels include, of course, Windows, Linux, and VxWorks as well, whereas a microkernel architecture separates all the operating system components into isolated address spaces and leverages the MMU, the memory management unit, for full isolation between the user space application, the device drivers, and the kernel itself. So all applications, all device drivers, all the interrupt handlers, all the protocol stacks are user space programs that are isolated from one another and isolated from the kernel. And yeah, you heard me right. Device drivers and interrupt handlers are user space programs. And device drivers in a microkernel can be restarted if they're corrupted without corrupting the kernel or affecting other user space applications. And this is huge for reliability, availability, and safety certification. All components in the system, the interrupt handlers, the device drivers, the protocol stacks, the watchdogs, the applications, all communicate among themselves using messages rather than function calls. And there are no pointers or shared buffers among function calls. And a messaging API offers the ability to better protect the interfaces than function or system calls. So with all processes living in their own memory-protected space, they can't corrupt other software components or the kernel. All processes plug into a messaging bus to communicate with other system components or drivers and the kernel itself. And each component can be started, can be stopped, or upgraded on the fly without a system restart, even drivers and protocol stacks. And yes, failures in drivers do not require system restarts. And this is a fundamentally different approach in the OS architecture that leads directly to designs that are highly available and reliable. But what exactly do I mean when I talk about high availability? Five nines being 99.999% availability could mean a 5-minute service outage once a year, which isn't so good for a medical device, but it could be tolerated in a bus or a train. So there are two aspects that affect availability. How much time is likely to pass before a component failure, and how long it takes to recover from a component failure. So system availability is a function of these two measures. In other words, if we can reduce the amount of time needed to recover from software faults to as small as possible, the overall system availability will be as close to 100% as possible. That is, if a failed software component can be restarted in a minimal amount of time, then your availability of your device will be as close to 100% as possible. So how do we recover from software faults in as little time as possible? An operating system that's based on a microkernel could have a high availability manager, an overseeing component that's notified directly by the kernel should a guarded process fault for any reason. And this is done in such a way that when the application or the driver faults, the kernel notifies the HA manager directly, which then collects debug information. And when the driver exits, the OS cleans up the resources, and then the high availability manager restarts a new instance of the driver and reconnects any of the IPC channels that were open. So then the driver comes up to date with checkpoint data. And the amount of time necessary to do this, of course, is incredibly small, but it depends on the available compute resources on the board. But it's certainly going to be much faster than a complete system restart. And this is how your system availability can approach 100%. Each time there's a fault within a monolithic kernel, the entire system must be restarted. Another critical component of a well-behaved system is CPU availability. It would be bad if the system's safety-critical processes were starved of CPU time. Think of the impact to an automated assembly line if the user interface process of, say, a KUKA robotic controller started to consume 100% of the CPU. things that can cause these sorts of CPU hogs are new and expanded features that result from software updates or third-party libraries that you don't have full control over, as well as the unknown threats that come with untrusted networks and viruses. So it could be possible for a rogue piece of software to occupy all of the CPU time and thus starve the main critical application on your device. So your product needs to include the appropriate guards directly into the architecture and the design to avoid this kind of problem. And this is another example of the extended benefits and features of a microkernel. With a monolithic operating system, you've got to build these guards and recovery mechanisms yourself. By architecting your applications into time slots or partitions and allocating a strict portion of CPU budget for each partition, you can be sure that the most critical application is going to receive its necessary amount of CPU cycles. So rogue processes running within a time slot or a partition can't exceed the amount of CPU budget allocated for their partition, which then leaves enough CPU time available for the other critical applications. So in this case, any of the partitions could go rogue and consume 100% of their partition, but the other partitions will still have available CPU budget for them. And partitions could be adaptive, which means that a partition can exceed its CPU budget, but only when the other partitions have completed their work with available time left over. And that's likely the case when the system's not fully loaded. So this kind of partitioning ensures that the system's processes get the necessary CPU budget regardless of rogue processes. So we've got microkernel architecture, adaptive partitions. These are some of the key differences in just simply the OS architecture that you should be aware of and that can lead to designs that are fundamentally highly available and easy to certify. These are the building blocks that are available to you that can lead to inherently better designs in a shorter period of time. There are other benefits to the microkernel architecture, such as easier driver-level development. I mentioned drivers and interrupt handlers are user space programs, and bugs are immediately isolated because the kernel catches illegal accesses within the drivers, and system components can be upgraded and patched on the fly without downtime. So I'm trying to indicate that the amount of work, the amount of effort, the labor, the elapsed time for development of your product can really be affected by your choice of operating system. Your dev team could be large as you build in these guards and mechanisms needed to meet the demands of high availability and the necessary reliability in embedded devices. Or you could leave that work to the RTOS vendor and have a much smaller team and focus only on the development of your application where your intellectual property is really focused. Now, you might not be familiar with QNX, but the RTOS is certified to be fully POSIX compliant, and this means that any application that uses POSIX operating system interfaces can easily be ported to QNX. So if you're familiar with Linux or Solaris or HPOX programming, QNX will be just as familiar programming environment to you. But it's not just about the OS architecture. There's also tooling that's involved with regard to development agility. Tooling can also greatly affect your pace of development. Non-integrated tools will leave you hunting and digging for the root cause of performance issues, whereas we offer a comprehensive Eclipse-based integrated development environment that has profiling tools for insight into system behavior, at-a-glance views of real-time interactions, memory profilers. We have a system profiler, a system builder, memory profiler, target tools. And one really unique technique is to analyze the CPU activity during a system restart to identify and serialize process dependencies in such a way that CPU idle time is really minimized, which can reduce the boot time by as much as 50% just by organizing how the processes in the system starts up. So our development tools are integrated with the RTOS, integrated with the target, meaning that building and testing applications for an embedded target is just as easy as developing and testing on a Linux desktop. And to make it even easier to develop industrial applications, QNX has full support for industrial protocols, including EtherCAT, Modbus, Profibus, Profinet, IEEE 1588, Ethernet IP CAN open, and others. And support for these protocols comes pre-integrated either from QNX or from our partners. So I've tried to show here that your choice of operating system can really impact your development and your product efforts and your timelines and the amount of work and testing that you need to do. Not all operating systems are equal, and QNX offers a unique solution for developing industrial applications that need high reliability, high availability, and in a minimal amount of time. We've got the building blocks that lead to highly reliable designs and let you focus on your effort of your specific application. But in the end, we're an operating system platform. You still need to develop your PLC application, and this is where Isograph really excels. So I'm going to pass it over to Stefan from Isograph.
Okay, thanks very much, Chris. So we saw the hardware part, the RTOS, the operating system part. Let's take a look at what was involved on the PLC firmware side. So for the Isograph firmware integration, we have a source code development kit, which includes the C source files of our runtime engine that can be ported to any platform. It includes a target definition builder, so we'll take a look at this in the upcoming slides. With this tool, you can choose the options you want to support on your platform. Then we compile the firmware for your design platform, and we go to market. So let's take a look at all this. Here we see it's our firmware toolkit includes, like I said, the C source files, libraries. We have some samples on a dozen different platforms. We have all the documentation that you would need to port this firmware to your system. And one key part of the runtime development kit is the target definition builder, which we see here. So with this tool, you basically choose the profile of your platform. So you'll need to specify if your CPU is Intel-based or Motorola-based, what's the byte alignment, and so on. Then you'll choose if you want to support binary TIC code or do you want to download C code. So there's a host of features and options that you can select with this target definition builder. And what comes out of it, it's basically two types of information. On one side, on the bottom here, we see that we generate .c and .h files for your own custom C functions and function blocks. If you want to develop your own I.O. drivers, your field bus protocols, and link those, so we generate the C files for that. And those can be compiled onto your platform using a C compiler for your device. And on the other side, on the top right, we're basically generating a text file or a TDB or a text file that you can import into the development environment. And this definition file will basically expose to the user the information that's relevant to your platform. So if you developed a special function or an I.O. driver, then this information would be exposed in the development tool for the end user. So some of the features you can select with the target definition builder, well, we have a host of features. You can have online changes. You can have redundancy or failover if you want to switch over control from a primary to a secondary device. If you want to have step-by-step debugging, breakpoints, if you want to store the project in memory so that somebody else can upload the project onto another computer. If you want to start with the initial values or retained values, if you want to support serial or Ethernet communications or other, if you want to have user interrupts, millisecond, microsecond cycle time, single resource or multi-resource, resource is basically a PLC task. So these are all basically things that you can choose to enable or disable in your hardware, in your target definition. As well, we do support the IEC 61131 standard data types. So we have Booleans, 8, 16, 32, 64-bit signed and unsigned integers, single precision, double precision floats. strings, dates, times. So these are all individually data types that you can choose to enable or disable. You can also define your own, what we call in the center here, user-defined data types. So if you have your own multidimensional arrays or structures, those can also be defined. You have access to a wide range of functionality that you can choose from. So, of course, we have all the standard IEC 61131 functions, function blocks, operators, and different types like mathematics, control, conversion from one type to another. So we have all the standard that standard functionality. But you can also add your own standard industry function blocks. If you have your own OEM custom functions or function blocks, those can be added. We've also, depending on the markets, if you want to have a PLC open safety function blocks or motion function blocks, and we also have the standard IEC 61499 function blocks, which Isograph supports. So how does the PLC firmware execute, or how does Isograph execute? Well, much like a PLC. We basically read inputs, the physical inputs. We execute the code based on those inputs from top to bottom as they appear in your application. We save retained values, and then we update the outputs. We save the retained values, and then we sleep until the next cycle. So you decide how long you want the execution cycle to be, and this is how we execute. In the next slide, it's exactly the same as the previous one, except we have user interrupts here. So you can have different sources of interrupts, and this is defined at the hardware level. There could be timer interrupts or hardware interrupts. And when this interrupt occurs, we can interrupt the regular execution cycle. We execute the logic. So the logic can be written in structured text or ladder or whatnot. So we execute this logic based on that interrupt. And then we continue the regular cycle afterwards. So this, the user interrupt is something that you can choose to include into your PLC platform. So that's for the PLC firmware. What about communications, the protocol stack? So what was needed to add EtherCAT functionality to this platform? There is the integration into the firmware, so on the actual hardware device. There's integration into the workbench, the development tools, and we'll look at some examples of what it looks like. So we're using EtherCAT in this case, and there are two main parts for the Isograph EtherCAT integration. First, we had to integrate the EtherCAT master from Koenig into the firmware. So you need to choose the platform operating system. Of course, we're using QNX in this case. Then you need to define the slaves to be used on the EtherCAT network, develop I/O drivers for these selected slaves. So these are all things that we need to integrate on the firmware side. On the development tool side, we integrated the EtherCAT Studio, also by Koenig, this configuration tool into the workbench. So this integration is already done by us. But let's take a look at the firmware integration first. So developed by Koenig, the KPA EtherCAT Master is an EtherCAT stack that can control a large variety of EtherCAT slaves from different manufacturers. So first of all, the stack must be ported on the same platform on which the firmware is ported, so QNX. The EtherCAT stack is available in binary format or in source code format and is provided by Koenig. And the stack has been ported on a variety of operating systems, QNX we're using here. So the virtual machines, so these are the PLC tasks that I referred to earlier. These will access the Koenig EtherCAT master through an I/O driver that we see basically in the middle. So the logic is executing on the left in the virtual machines. The EtherCAT master is on the right, and we built this bridge between between the two through what we refer to as an I/O driver. So the slaves are attached or mapped to the Isograph virtual machine through different I/O device instances. And here we're looking at an example of what the I/O device configuration would look like in an Isograph. So on the left-hand side, we have a list of I/O devices, and on the right-hand side, we have a list of I/O channels, individual I/O channels, for the currently selected I/O device on the left. As for the workbench integration, so on the development tool side, developed by Koenig, the KPA EtherCAT Studio is a powerful EtherCAT configuration tool that allows users to configure the network. It allows users to discover an existing EtherCAT network and can also go online to manage the EtherCAT masters and much more. The EtherCAT Studio is fully integrated in the Isograph 6 workbench as a plugin. So Isograph is basically based on a Visual Studio shell, and all the different configuration windows and editors are basically .NET plugins. So we've integrated the KPA EtherCAT Studio as a plugin into Isograph 6. And this integration allows existing KPA EtherCAT Studio users to benefit from all the functionalities that they're used to. So we can start the KPA EtherCAT Studio by double-clicking on the EtherCAT node available under the configuration or the device node in the Solution Explorer on the right. So we double-click on that, and it opens the KPA Studio. And the solution tree on the right, which is the Isograph project solution tree, is synchronized with the KPA solution tree. So those are both synchronized. And each configuration in Isograph represents one master in KPA Studio. The main goal of the integration was to build this bridge between the EtherCAT configuration tool and the IEC 61131 programming world, which is what Isograph has been developing for many years. It's our expertise. So we've implemented the slave management plugin in order to make this bridge or this link possible. So in the Isograph Solution Explorer, which we see here, if you right-click on a particular resource and then click on Slaves Management, this opens the Slaves Management tool. And this Slaves Management tool consists of two columns. On the left-hand side, we have a list of available EtherCAT slaves. So these are the slaves that are discovered on the EtherCAT network, so we populate this list. And on the right-hand side, we have the list of currently attached slaves. So this is a list of the EtherCAT slaves that are already used in the selected resource. So if you select a slave on the left and click on Attach here in the middle, this will make a link between the selected slave and the Isograph resource. And this link automatically creates an I/O device and populates this I/O device with the necessary parameters, so you don't have to do this configuration twice. And these parameters will be used by the I/O driver that is developed on the firmware side. In the dictionary, so this is our list of tags that are available to the TLC application. In the global variables list of the selected resource, the variables that represent the slave's channel are automatically created. And the name of the variable includes the slave ID and the channel number. So basically, each channel is a structure that contains many signals. So the device status variable is also created to read the status of the slave. Is it working? Is it updating? What is the current status? We also have features like searching for a slave. So you can type the name of a slave on top here, and it shows you the list of corresponding EtherCAT slaves that match that. So this is also available in the slaves management tool. And then once everything is configured, so you have your list of I/O devices, the EtherCAT slaves you want to use, now you want to write the PLC code based on this information. And with the Isograph, you have many different options for programming. You have, because we support the IEC 61131 languages and also IEC 64099, Here we're looking at an example which is based on structured text. So we have autocomplete in our structured text editor. So as you start typing the first few letters of the slave device, then it'll show you all matching devices that that correspond to those first few letters. So you can easily start writing PLC code based on the EtherCAT devices that you set up in the application. Another example is here we're looking at a ladder program. So we're building up a ladder rung with two contacts here, and you double-click on a contact, it pops open the variable selector window. And from this variable selector window, you just locate the specific EtherCAT device information that you want to use, that you want to associate to this Boolean input of the ladder program. And there are many other examples or languages that you can use in the EtherGraph. I just want to show you two quick samples here. And at this point, I'll let John continue.
Thank you very much, Stefan. As Stefan mentioned earlier, the integration of the EtherCAT Studio from Koenig was easily achieved by putting it into the .NET and integrating it. As you can see in this diagram, the actual studio is fully customizable in different areas, and also the integration so that it can be used in many different variants. Similarly for the master stack, here it has the master application and the KPA Studio share the same API, so they can run and be used in a similar manner. Now, one thing about stack is the fact that it's totally modular. So in other words, here, if you want to start off with simple data processing, some CAN and some file access and slave to slave, for a simple I/O device, then you can use a basic block. If you want to add in the messaging, message passing, so you can do Ethernet over EtherCAT and so on, or add in servo drives or whatever, you can add in modules and build up accordingly. So now we've gone through most of the implementation of the PLC. How long did it take us? Okay. Well, back in Q1 of this year, we had the small P1025 tower board available, and it was productionized. And then that allowed us to start the process. We had the conversations between all four companies started in April, the beginning of April. And at that point, QNX took over, and we shipped a series of boards so that they could actually implement it, the port of Neutrino. The boards with Neutrino were then shipped to both Koenig and EtherGraph, and the integration work of putting the whole thing together was done. We had the first working version round about the end of June. So it didn't take very – it took a lot of implementation effort between the companies, but basically it was relatively seamless to implement it. The major problems we had were shipping boards around or shipping stuff around the country. Or around the world, actually. The next portion of it is the fact that you can see we had it running, and we had the rough documentation available because there's a complete user manual associated with it. The rest of the time, up until the demonstration in the Freescale technical event in Japan, was quality assurance and done by EtherGraph to validate the product. To let you understand the quality of the runtime and the implementation of the hooks and handles that were implemented is the fact that it's near enough as production quality as you can get. So hence the reason of the long qualification cycle, and we've had a lot of hair tearing out about trying to get it out there before qualification was complete, but the QA department said no, it had to be gone through. So this diagram shows you the build-up in a logical manner. On the left-hand side, you have the offline tools, the Koenig Studio, and the Workbench by Isograph. In the middle, you have the complete runtime scenario that runs on the P1025. And on the right-hand side, we have a series of EtherCAT slaves that we would control. This next slide shows you the physical build-up. So we had all the offline tools running on a PC under Windows. We had the tower board with the runtime stack. And then because there isn't a standard ETG slave, and Beckhoff is the de facto instigator of the EtherCAT, we used Beckhoff slaves. If it had been Profinet, it would have been the similar type of thing. The Profi organization doesn't have a de facto, and as Siemens started all, hence the reason we would use a Siemens implementation for the slave if it was Profinet or Profibus. The next thing is the fact that how we got this working and we got it proven, and hence the qualification was done on that. What this slide shows is a bit of marketing here about buying stuff, but basically the performance of the system was the fact that Koenig did a series of benchmarking, and with a 555 megahertz P1025, we were able to do 1 millisecond cycle time on large packets using less than 1% of one core. The P1025 has two physical PowerPC cores running at full speed. This only used 1% of one core, so that meant that you had a lot of information available. At the bottom of the page there is a Ethernet link where you can find all the information associated with the project and how to get different parts of the system. This slide gives you the complete rundown of what would happen if you wanted to do it. You've heard about it. You've heard me mention the performance. You've seen what's been available. And if you wish to try it yourself, we've actually made the system available so that it can be downloaded. What you'd have to do is acquire one of the Tower P1025 boards, and inside that box is the board itself, power supply, 5 volts, and a USB cable. You, the customer, would have to supply the slaves, the particular ones that are mentioned. They're detailed in the user manual when you go onto the website. A couple of Ethernet cables, a USB stick, a PC, and a bit of wire. So the fact that you can implement some of the tutorials that are built into the user manual. The runtime can be downloaded along with the offline tools from the QNX website or from the Isograph website. You just follow the links. All of the companies involved have the links on their pages which show you where to get the information from. There are two other bits of tools that you would most probably need. One is TerraTerm, which is a free terminal emulation program, and a USB to UART, because on the P1025, the UARTs are converted into a USB interface. So basically, you need a driver for the PC. Okay. And the email address is down at the bottom there again. And finally, this is the closing slide. As Freescale, we just want to go through some of these scaling points here. We go from about 100 MIPS to 58,000 MIPS. We do that because if you look at our device range, specifically in the Core IQ, we go from one single core all the way up to 24 cores. So the fact that you have a complete scalable implementation. The devices also have a range of I/O, everything from very simple serial all the way up to 10 gigabit interfaces on the system. So the fact that we can cover most applications. Because they're complete SoCs, they have the only thing you have to supply to them for the Core IQ portions of the devices are DDR memory and flash and some PHYs for the particular interfaces that you're interested in. All the rest is included in the device. Some of them don't even need PHYs. Specifically, they have built-in PHYs for USB and other interfaces as required. They are rugged. The Core IQ devices come from a very long heritage of being in the telecommunications market and in the enterprise switching market. There you heard Chris talk about the 5.9's availability. Well, most of the Freescale devices have been in switches and so on in telecommunication, which by default have to have operated at that capability in the hardware sense. So they're rugged. They have a longevity, specifically when they go into those types of marketplaces. We've actually formalized that scheme in the longevity program that is available on the Freescale web. If you go onto that, you can see which devices are part of that and how long they will be supported after they go into production. Okay. I'll hand off now to Chris and QNX.
Thanks, John. I just wanted to wrap up with a few points. I did talk about the OS architecture provided by QNX and the microkernel. We have the architecture that's necessary for, and we offer it for building reliable and mission-critical industrial applications, allowing you to just focus on your application and not having to worry about building in all of those guards and features. We've got 30-plus years of history of providing real-time operating systems for industrial applications, and also uniquely, we have the interesting industry-leading real-time performance resulting in unmatched EtherCAT benchmarks. And those benchmarks are available on Konix's website that lists, they do extensive testing and benchmarking against various operating systems. And you'll see that QNX is a leader with latencies and EtherCAT performance. Over to you, Stefan.
Thanks, Chris. So just on our part, a few key points. We're the only vendor to support both IEC 61131 and 61499 environments in the same tool. We have a programming environment that's modular, flexible, customizable, so you really expose only the information that you want to expose to the end user. And proven in use, well, we have over 1 million licenses sold worldwide, so these are some key points for us. John?
And I'm doing the Konix bit today as well. Basically, they support hardware development, prototyping, as well as the stacks, both the master and slave stacks for EtherCAT and the studio product to allow the configuration. They have adaption services for the stacks and provide a programming service is required. Now, I think, Kurt, can you take it from here?
Thank you very much. Great presentations, and we have a lot of good questions, so let's just kind of get right to it here. John, there's a question about how the PowerPC board can support Profinet, Ethernet, PowerLink, CAN Open, and VARAN, et cetera, under QNX. I think you talked a little bit about the modularity of the system. Maybe you can elaborate how you can how the support happens, and a follow-on question that's important is how can customers integrate their existing C applications with these kinds of things?
Okay, the board, the P1025 board, has the capability of doing Ethernet. So basically for the Ethernet-based protocols like EtherCAT, we do the master. For Ethernet IP, we have had it ported by Molex using their stack onto the Core IQ. The big brother of this board, the P2020. We've had TrophyNet, also ported by Molex to the P2020. So the fact that because they're the same cores, the same internal architecture, they will both run. So with regards CAN, this P1025 physically doesn't have the CAN interface on board. The P1010 does. So it can actually run CAN and CAN open, and there are stacks that have been ported already to run on the P1010. If you want them all on the same device, there are other devices in the family which have that capability as well. So they have Ethernet and CAN, and they also have the programmable engine, which is on the serial programmable engine that's on the P1025, which allows us to program and bitbang serial communication protocols like Profibus. We have a fully certified Profibus slave using the 1025. This little board plus a PHY board in the tower format was taken to the Siemens labs and certified. The reason why I went to the Siemens labs is because they control the implementation and validation of the protocol that they originally started.
I see. Okay. Great. Maybe Chris and Stefan can chime in here on the application development on top for these kinds of things. Are there APIs, Chris, that can be used? How does the application integration on the PLCs work?
The application being custom developed, you can use the POSIX interfaces as well as the interfaces provided by the protocols themselves.
Right.
So it would be very seamless to integrate the application with the protocol.
Okay. Stefan, with the Isograph stuff, are there APIs that are exposed to application writers to make it easy to develop their PLC application?
Develop your PLC applications, you port the runtime engine to your platform. We have an API called IXL, which is the Isograph exchange layer that allows you to communicate with third-party processes also on the same platform. You can an I/O device is basically a set of C functions, so this is your link with the field bus protocol, so there's different options there.
I see. Okay. Stefan, there's a question about how you interface with HMI, Indusoft, for example. Do you have any kind of question or comments on those kinds of interfaces?
Included with Isograph, we have an OPC server. So it's an OPC DA 3.0 compatible server, so any OPC client, HMI or other, that supports OPC DA 3.0 would be able to browse the list of Isograph tags and make those available to the HMI and have them animate based on the live status of these variables.
Okay. Chris, there's a question about how QNX can help support a PLC application that needs to be 61508 certified. Do you have any information on that?
Well, the way I would approach that sort of problem, and 61508 is focused on safety-critical systems that are life-threatening, and QNX does have an IEC 61508 certified kernel, and I would begin by building with our 61508 compliant RTOS and then build in the rest of the applications necessary that way.
I see. John, there's a question about board support less than 1 millisecond cycle time. Can you maybe talk about the Core IQ and cycle time options and specifically the reference board you mentioned?
Right. The cycle time that was mentioned there was for the EtherCAT master stack being implemented. Now, at the 1 millisecond point, it uses the 1% of the core. As you go down to 500 microseconds or 200 microseconds, so that's depending on the interrupts generated by the operating system and how fast and how big the master packets are that are being shoved around the system and what is required in the processing of those. But each one of those will take an exponential processing power from the core. Now, we've had some customers ask us, because we've got two cores on there, can we go as fast as possible and just burn the entire resource of the core? And the answer is yes. And they can use the second core to actually do the PLC functionality or even some of the motion control functionality. As regards the actual timing and how fast we can get, whoever's want to, please send us an email. We can discuss it further.
Okay, very good. Thanks. Stefan, will the ISOGRAPH sources from the targeted definition builder be compiled into a single process or multiple processes? Can you describe that a little bit?
Yeah, it all depends on the platform that you want to use. So we have basically two versions of the ISOGRAPH runtime engine. You can use the monotask version or the multitask version, depending if you have monotask, multitask operating system, or even platforms without an OS.
Okay.
So it's basically up to the developer if you want to compile everything into a single task or into multiple tasks for Ethernet communications and code execution and so on.
Okay, great. Chris, follow on to that in terms of integrating the resulting ISOGRAPH code. Can you talk a little bit about how that integrates into QNX? And there was a question about something about QNX HAM. Can you talk about that potentially?
Sure. The you would specify the ISOGRAPH processes to be a guarded process with regard to the HAM, the High Availability Manager.
Okay.
Be able to identify and specify those processes as guarded processes, and then run the configure the High Availability Manager in that way.
Okay, very good. Unfortunately, that brings us to the end of our Q&A session. We're sorry about any questions that we did not get to, but rest assured, your question is still in the list. You can feel free to contact our speakers directly, and or I'm sure our speakers will be getting back to you on those additional questions. Thank you very much, John and Chris and Stefan, for sharing your insights on PLC development. We also at Open Systems Media and the presenters want to thank you all for attending today and contributing those questions remotely. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours, and an audio-only podcast version will also be made available. You can do a web search with the keywords embedded space e-cast and find all of Open Systems Media eCasts available for download as MP3. Thank you for attending, and have a great day.